Welcome to the fifth episode of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. This show was recorded at Light Fair from the booth of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. We had some technical difficulties. It was the first time we ever took it on the road. We lost a show to poor audio. We lost another one because I forgot to press record. But the recording with Robin Watt, who's the president of Nailed, and he's also a sales rep for C.N. Robinson Supply out of Baltimore, Maryland, along with our old friend of the show, Brady Nemeth from the DLC, was pretty darn interesting. I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to put this one out without a highlight reel because, well, I'm a little bit lazy, to be honest with you guys. But no, honestly, I think the podcast is pretty good from start to finish, and I don't think there's much to really extract. I don't think it would shorten it very much. So without further ado, I give you my co-host Greg Eric, Robin Watt, and Brady Nemeth from the Nailed booth at Light Fair.
Hey, lighting freaks. We're live. So we're at Light Fair 2017 to start things off. We got Michael Colligan here, Atlas Lighting. We got Greg Eric from Premier Lighting. Say hi, Greg.
Hi there.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are good. You guys?
We got the president of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. And also, what's your title at CNR?
Account executive.
It's account executive for CNR Lighting out of Maryland?
Baltimore, Maryland.
And again, we got a friend of a show back again for his second shot. Brady Nemeth from the DLC. What's up, Brady?
Not a whole lot. Well, I'm kidding. There's actually a lot because we're at Light Fair, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Where's
just
your
booth?
Just
making small talk. We're actually not very far. We are about three proverbial blocks away from you right over here in Hall F. So.
Three blocks.
You kind of missed out on announcing who the president is. It's Robin Watt.
Did you not the president. And we're also, guys, we're also in the booth of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. But before we get into the conversation, I'd like to say that this podcast is brought to you by nobody. And I think I was just, Greg and I have been wondering, Robin, if the board of directors has considered sponsoring the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Actually, we have. We're very excited about the prospect. We need to nail down a couple of things, no pun intended. But yeah,
too easy.
Actually, we are very interested. We think I've described Colligan as a force of nature. He knows this. I think he relishes the title. But we think you'll do good things with this, and we're actually pretty excited about it.
Oh, we're live lighting freaks for phase two here. We had it already pinned down that Robin Watt had says the board is very interested in moving this podcast forward. You know what I think, honestly?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I didn't hear anything.
I think it still might be recorded.
I think he has the audio, so we can. The audio is available, so don't even try it.
Yeah, no, we are excited.
But you know what's interesting about that is that I think distributors need a bigger voice, and I think it came when we talked to Brady and when he was at the convention. I think it came forward that distributors and contractors have been largely ignored in the process, Brady, and to no one's fault, really, because we're not the loudest kind of guys. Has the DLC moved anything forward on that?
Yeah, actually, since we had talked at the Nailed conference, we've been talking with a few folks in Nailed, and we're kind of in the middle of trying to formulate some sort of partnership. So I know, for instance, Greg sitting across from me right now will be joining us in Portland for our stakeholders meeting. It sounds like we're going to have a continued presence at the Nailed meeting. I mean, all the feedback has been great. Just walking the floor in the last day and a half, I've seen a handful of people that I saw at Nailed, both vendors, the manufacturers, and a couple of distributors. And all the feedback's been really, really good. I've been trying to convey that as best I can, up the chain. And we've made a lot of progress in the last week or two, but obviously everyone's kind of been bogged down with Light Fair. So I think there'll be a more solidified partnership here coming up in the next couple weeks.
I think that... I think that distributors and contractors, I'm going to include them. I know that, Premier Lighting is not a contracting company, but I'm going to bring them in because I think a lot of those entities and those companies have a lot of knowledge to contribute to this conversation, Greg. I mean, would you say that your utility relies on you heavily for information with respect to rebate programs and that?
Yeah, absolutely. In our market, Xcel Energy is one of the bigger ones, and they ask us for input, and they usually go to me as one of the first people because we do a lot with the rebate programs and just asking what makes sense and what doesn't, and then kind of where we sell items at so that they can help determine what the rebates are that'll fall in line as well. So we do a lot with that.
Yeah, we get a lot of we provide a lot of feedback as well for ICF, who are the program managers in our area. Actually, they just took over from Lockheed Martin for the Pepco program. We have about three large utilities.
Hang on, Lockheed Martin was running a rebate program?
Yeah, they were doing the Pepco rebate.
Yeah, they're one of the major ones.
Don't they like build like the systems for the Army and stuff?
Yeah, they build bombs and they do energy efficiency programs.
they're very much into any program that requires oversight on behalf of the government, Lockheed Martin.
So CNR, how does CNR relate to rebate programs? What do you guys, like, do you guys do a lot of rebate applications? Do you leave
Absolutely.
It to your contract? Oh, you
Absolutely.
Do? Okay.
Yeah, very strong in our area. We have two major utilities, Pepco and Baltimore Gas and Electric. They both have very strong, there are a couple of smaller ones as well, Southern Maryland Electric Cooperative, but they all have pretty strong rebate programs. And a great deal of our business has been to help our customers acquire these rebates. So we apply for them, help them get the rebates and get the checks.
Do you interact
to them.
With the DLC every day?
Not DLC, but we certainly are on the website. And for all part that nailed here, Brady, I have to tell you that the feedback of having you at the conference this year has been tremendous.
That's fantastic.
So we're very excited to have you on board.
And, you know, I think that's a really interesting point. One of the things, you know, I was fortunate enough to participate in the OCC, was it Organized Casual Conference?
Yeah, I just figured out what that meant after 10 years.
Yeah. Well, good. I got it down after 1 year, so I'm all set. But, you know, one of the things I ask a lot of distributors is, are you guys participating in rebate programs? Are you guys doing it? So I know Robin was one who said yes. There are some people who try and wash their hands of it a little bit. They don't want to get in that. You know, we've also seen people, you know, even walk by our booth today where they kind of try and be that middleman. So if a distributor doesn't want to do it, then they'll be able to step in and say, okay, well, I have this big retail company and they want to do it, but they don't want to deal with the rebates. We'll hop in for them. So the sort of problem is that rebate, the incentive, you know, filling out the paperwork, that falls on a ton of different people depending on what businesses say this is in our own interest to do it. If they can see value in it, then they'll do it, but if not, they'll pawn it off to
but
someone
else. The DLC doesn't get involved in the creation of the application systems that the different utilities create.
Right, absolutely. We don't. So everyone can, member or not, I mean, the list is publicly available. They can use it however they want. So, for instance, off the top of my head, you know, we had version 4.0 take effect earlier this year after about an eight-month delay, essentially. And we had a massive delisting on April 1st. That was everything that met 4.0 after April 1st would stay on. But for instance, PG&E out in California, I think they're the largest utility, they said starting January 1st for our program, if it's not going to be on the list past April 1st, we're not going to incentivize it now. So everyone goes and uses the list differently.
Now, do you think there's ever going to be a next step, like a 5.0, or why did it go from DLC to 4.0? What's the significance
of 4? Yeah, so generally speaking, the first digit there, if that's changing, it's more of a structural change to the program, and the second one is usually going to be an addition, so for instance, more primary use designations or more options being added. So what happened in 4.0, it was actually the first time we had raised efficacy levels across the board in nearly 4 years. We had raised some levels here and there, and we had played with the technical requirements table, but across the board, that was the first time we had raised efficacy levels. And I don't think anyone here at Lightfair could tell you that the technology hasn't come a long way in 4 years. So,
but how much further do we have to go? I mean, Greg and I in the last podcast were kind of going back and forth on the future of lighting, and we talked about different things, Li-Fi controls. We talked about, you know, increased efficiency gains and so on and so forth. I mean, we already have a 12-watt 4-foot tube.
Ooh.
I mean, what is it, 120 lumens per watt or something?
Yeah, 130, 140.
High like that. I mean, isn't there a ceiling here? Are we not getting close to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, who knows how close exactly we are. You know, that remains to be seen. But I think starting last year's stakeholders meeting that we held out in Denver, we heard a lot of feedback over, hey, maybe let's cool it on the efficacy front. So what we've started doing is we've added things like allowances. So for products that have very high CRI, which is naturally going to take away from the efficacy, will allow them an allowance, basically. So that way it's kind of pushing the quality factor a little bit more, making sure that the products are staying installed. And that'll be a big focus at this year's stakeholders meeting. And tomorrow I'm attending a session here at Lightfair that's actually being given by one of our members, Ed Bartholomew from Massachusetts. I believe he's with National Grid. he's giving an incentivizing quality speech. So I think that it's, when you talk about ceiling, I think you're largely kind of inferring efficacy, and I think that's a fair point. So there's definitely other areas to move forward to make sure that programs
we're talking quality. We're talking quality instead of quantity, right?
Yes, so, but as far as efficacy is concerned, one of the keynotes nailed last year was Mark Lean, and he pointed to efficacies approaching 300 lumens per watt.
On sort of an individual dye level and things like that.
That's actually physically possible now, just not commercially available or marketed. So the point is, it's there. That's where we can go. Whether it'll be commercially viable to get there is a different question.
Well, I think that's the question. For me, okay, first of all, let's assume for a second that these LEDs are going to last as long as they say they're going to last, which is a whole other conversation. But let's assume that for a second. I can't go back to a customer and say, hey, pull out those 12-watt tubes and put in this 8-watt one. That's a stretch, man. And like we were talking about the utility cost. If the electricity rate stays, you know, whatever, 5%, 10% a year increase, whatever it is, 2% some areas, I don't think there's a business case for that.
Well, think back to the 32-watt T8. It's the same concept.
Yeah, but how many people went to 25-watt T8? What, 5% of the market?
No.
I'd say we 28 or 25, so a big chunk.
We converted a lot of people down. And it was largely assisted by rebates as well. So I'll qualify that statement with that.
So you're talking you took a T8 person to a T8 low watt.
A 32-watt T8 to a 25-watt high efficiency T8.
So you ripped out, but you're going to rip out a working LED lamp?
That was done on a replacement basis. It was easy to sell them the lower wattage lamp. That was also discussed this year at the NAIL conference by Mark, where he said he made the point that the efficacies are such and the energy savings are such that there's a diminishing return on your efficiency. So the sale is not actually going to be made on efficiency anymore. It's going to be made now on the quality of the product.
I don't know.
Well, light levels. You're going to lose 30% of your light over the life. Right. At some point, you're going to start noticing it.
But I think that's MRO.
What's MRO?
Greg and I. Okay, we already had this argument about the definition of MRO. Okay, look, replacement lamp supply. I think that's replacement lamp supply. Let me ask you this. Can I change gears?
Because sure.
I don't think I'm ever going to come around to the idea that 3 watts makes a change on a project basis. You're going to have a hard time convincing me of that.
It doesn't.
And, you know, I would never go to an existing client and say, hey, gosh, man, why don't you save another 3% or whatever? What about color temperature? We're going to bring on Christian Monrad. He's going to be on episode 7 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And not to, you know, kind of take his thunder, but has a DLC thought about color temperature at all?
I don't know if that specific issue has come up. I mean, where it would start coming up would be if there are utilities out there who say, whoa, we've seen these studies, we've seen whatever, we're concerned about it. We don't want to. And then they would come back and then we'd start looking to change the technical requirements and say, okay, maybe for outdoor pole arm mounted area luminaires, we're going to reduce the color temperature, you know, the bins. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if that specific issue has come up by membership.
I don't know. I've only, you know, I'm a 3000 Kelvin guy. I hate 5000 K. I always have.
For outdoor, indoor and outdoor?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
The argument against 3000K was largely a color rendering index argument in the past. They couldn't get the color rendering index high enough in...
Or the R factor.
Yeah. In HPS and in fluorescent. Like a traditional warm white is like a 52 CRI. But LEDs, it's no difference at all. The color temperature can be 85 at 3000K.
Well, I think that, like I said, that's part of where we're going or where we've been trying to go with allowances, because a lot of people were having issues getting the color quality that they wanted and still meeting our efficacy levels, whether it be CRI or, you know, just naturally. I mean, technology's gotten to the point where there's not as big of a difference in efficacy when you're going between color temperatures, but for the most part, there still is that difference. So what the allowances can do is say, okay, well, you're going to put in a super high quality, light quality product. Your efficacy is going to naturally be a little bit lower. We'll give you an allowance because that is a product that's wanted and needed in the marketplace.
If you go back to the metaphor of medicine ball, boom, HPS is a medicine ball in terms of reflectance. Boom, hits the ground, doesn't re-reflect. These 50K LED streetlights are like Indian rubber balls.
Boom. Well, I think the color temperature argument, Mike, was more about circadian rhythms than reflectance. The AMA report was the one that highlighted that that circadian rhythm issue as regards cooler white light. I know for a lot
so
of
what
the
was
manufacturers...
what was the essence of the report then? Did you read it?
Well, no, I didn't.
Did you read it, Brady?
It was a while ago.
And what was that? What were they saying? Is that it's going in people's windows and making them not sleep?
AMA, yeah, I mean, you had IES and lots of other industry groups come back and say, whoa, you're kind of out of your lane a little bit here. We understand the complaints about circadian, but there's more that goes into it than just, oh, here's a color temperature, you know. There's all sorts of different applications and the way a street light can light up a road. And right, if light's going backwards in the houses, that's, you know, going to be an issue and stuff like that. But
they're talking about bird migrations.
But no, for the benefit of all listeners, this report came out. I think it was last year, and it was discussing the effect of blue or white light on your circadian rhythm and interfering with your sleep habits.
How is your circadian rhythm, buddy? Is it good?
My circadian rhythm is very good. Thank you, sir. But the response that I heard, Brady, and from the manufacturers was that that blue light, that circadian rhythm disrupting light, was more apt to come from your iPad or your cell phone
in
your bed at night or a TV on, rather than street lights bleeding through your window.
I think you're right about that. I think I would say that the circadian rhythm issue is dead on arrival. As just a lighting guy, I think close your curtains, buddy, would be my you know. I just don't see.
But why
that
do
much.
That when you can blame someone else?
Well, this is what I mean. But I think there is a real issue in terms of animal migrations and light pollution. I think that's a real issue. I do. I think it really is. And I mean, what percentage of the streetlights in North America have been converted? I mean, what is it? That would probably be the lowest, like municipal streetlights would probably be the lowest level of penetration of LED, I think. I don't know. Am I wrong about that? It'd probably be maybe 20%, 15%, 10%. What would be the level of penetration into the market
Of streetlights, you're saying?
Yeah. Like municipal streetlights, municipal. Not.
I think it's over 30%.
Is it?
It's probably 30 to 50.
So if they're saying that this is affecting the migration of wildlife.
That's get off the roads, wildlife.
Come on. Fly over to the left.
Well, I mean, they certainly address that issue with turtles in
I was
going to
bring up
South Florida.
That's the one I've heard a lot about.
With low-pressure sodium lighting, the municipalities are the ones who have to mandate that. And it's in Florida, I know, it's very important. And I guess some of the other Gulf states where you are not allowed to have higher than a certain CRI because, quite frankly, cool white, you know, the moon is supposed to be 4,000K apparently. So,
and the sun is what, 3,000K? Sun ain't white, buddy.
You're right.
In my world, I don't know, maybe it's white in yours, Greg. In Minnesota, does it rise white?
It does. But hey, what we need to get into a little, we're going to do this on Podcast 7. Let's have our light fair here. We're here.
Well, what are we talking about? I mean,
you've
just
been here for a whole hour.
I know. I rolled
what have you seen?
I set up my microphones, man. I mean, I already know everything. I don't need to see anything.
Come on, man.
Get a grip.
What do we got? Let's go around and see what we learned so far. How long have you been here, Robin? So far,
actually, I've been through the Philips booth, and that was it. And then I came here.
What did Philips give you?
Philips have some pretty cool stuff. They have their new, not sure what they call it. It's a new recessed light that's wafer thin. Very nice. It has an external or remote driver attached to it.
Where do you see the application on that? New construction or retro?
Yeah, retrofit, recessed, where retrofit applications where there's a recessed light, maybe in a ceiling that doesn't have a lot of space because of HVAC or sprinkler lines or something.
But if there's already a recessed light?
No, where you want a recessed light.
Yeah. So, okay.
Oh,
gotcha.
So retrofit. You're correct. Yep. If you want to dress
you,
up.
What about you, Brady, from the DLC's perspective? Have you seen anything that's game-changing then?
I think you see a lot of horticulture here this year. A lot of horticultural lighting.
Explain that. I know what you mean, but explain it. Explain what you mean by that.
I mean,
grow lights.
Yeah, well, grow lights is certainly one.
Are you
one
talking
part
about
of
marijuana, Brady?
We are.
Are you a pothead? Come on, man.
We are talking about the wacky tobacco, I think.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, you know what? It's going to be legal in Canada, and the federal government's tackling it. It's not leaving it to the province, not chickening out like they are in the States. And not to get into that argument on the podcast, I think there's a lot of people that are very sensitive about whether that's a whole beyond lighting. I think that would turn into a life podcast. Get a grip on life. It's coming out soon. Don't wait for it, guy. It's coming.
It is an interesting point, though, because it is adding a huge electrical load in some of these states, and it is, you know, utilities are looking for how can we how can we mitigate this issue? So I think you mentioned Excel, and Excel's in a few different areas, and one of which is Colorado, where it's legal, and I believe they've started incentives for grow operations. So DLC is certainly looking into horticulture for obviously not the sole purpose of
when it becomes legal, they'll just grow it in fields? Like, as soon as it becomes legal, they'll just grow it outside.
Well, I mean, there's lots of research being done right now about how much better you can grow plants with, you know, indoor in a controlled environment. So I think that's sort of the argument that's going on right now. I mean, that, you know, I don't know enough about the horticultural market.
Not to mention, I imagine, a security issue. You want to be able to protect your crop from...
Yeah, but again, it's not going to be illegal, right? So, I mean, you're talking about commoditizing it. People can buy a pack of large Marlboro spliffs at the local corner store or dispensary or whatever.
Well, unlike Canada, this isn't really a lighting topic, but I mean, it's still illegal on the federal level. So I can see a lot of, you know, there's an issue a few years back where banks weren't even interacting with these grow operations. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see in the lighting market too, where people might be hesitant to deal with them because it's still federally illegal, and spending money on that when the Fed could come in at any time and shut them down. I think that's...
In Canada, there's a lot of people that are building extracting machines. We did a job for a company that ordered a bunch of extractor and distiller systems. So what they do is they take the dope, they extract the THC and the cannabinoids and the other stuff that is good for anti-inflammatory things or whatever, and they then distill it in, they make different products out of it. That's already happening. We did a lighting job for people like that. So there's stuff happening. I mean, for me, I mean, if someone wants to give me money to buy lights, I sell them the lights.
Right.
You know, I don't get into the... I don't think it's my position as a distributor to be also part of the... what do you guys call it? The alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. you know, whatever that ATF. I think I just sell lights. I mean, what's it got to do with me? Someone calls up and says, hey, do you know anything about horticultural lights? Yeah, sure, I do.
Well, for all you know, they could be growing tomatoes, right?
Well, so, they do grow tomatoes in grow houses in Ontario all the time. So.
Or tomatoes.
Tomatoes, actually, yeah.
Tomatoes or potatoes.
Tomatoes in Minnesota.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, you're right. And actually, I'm fascinated with the aspect that LED is even good for growing any kind of crop. Because
I think fluorescence better,
UV
actually.
was what assisted a lot with it, but now they have workarounds now that allow LED to do as good or if not a better job than the traditional light sources are, and obviously saving a ton of energy in the mix.
How would the DLC do anything with that? What are you guys going to do with that? That's not big enough for you.
You know, that's what we're still talking about now. We've got a discussion session at this year's stakeholders meeting about it. You know, like I said, you walk around Light Fair and you see more and more people involved in horticultural. But the issue is there's a lot of science that's still to be worked out. It's, you know, what are we going to do? Right now we have primary use designations for, you know, the end use. So whether it's a roadway light or a high bay or whatever. But what is that going to look like for horticultural? That's what we're still working through. Is it going to be, well, if you're growing this type, if you're growing a tomato, you know, you want this many micromoles per joule or something like that. How are you going to, you know, work through that? So it's a process.
The application is not static.
Right. And it could, right, you might want a different type of light for a different type of grow operation. So it's difficult. We're working through that now. We're, you know, exploring it.
I also think the concept of LEDs, particularly purpose-built LEDs, Greg, where there isn't this replaceable light source, is problematic for growing, because the dimming and the lumen maintenance and the long life, will the UV decay over time and require replacement lamps and, you know, this kind of thing. I think that grow operations are going to need replaceable light sources.
I think you're hitting on a bigger topic there with that.
What's that?
Just the replaceable components.
In general.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other thing and that we could go off on. But, you
and
know, I've always said my favorite socket is an incandescent socket.
You love it.
You can just screw anything you want into it.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It burns out, you screw something else in.
Yeah, whatever you
that's
like.
That's it.
Boom.
But that's another topic. So,
in terms of the quality of past luminaires, so you're an emerging professional.
I am.
Have you emerged?
Guess I'm in the process. I don't know. According to the IES, so I'm in the process. Yeah.
I think I've emerged. I don't know. Greg, have you emerged?
I have not fully emerged yet.
I think I need to reemerge.
You might need to be submerged, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably true.
I mean, so I'm not going to say the name of the municipality that's having this problem, but they did a massive street lighting upgrade. And they're having all kinds of problems with rubber seals on the fixtures bursting. They're having problems with lumen maintenance. They're having problems with drivers failing. And it's just not working out the way they thought it was going to work out. Have you guys done any postmortems or any going back and looking at large-scale projects and analyzing them for were paybacks realized? Did the DLC specifications work out the way we thought? Have you guys done anything like that?
You know, that's really outside of our scope. That'd be more on the utility level. I mean, obviously, to an extent, they figure that it's worked out because they keep coming back and keep using the list. As far as, you know, one of my main roles at the DLC is taking on the surveillance testing program, which is kicked off in 2017, and that is to make sure, obviously, that a lot of these products, you know, you were mentioning things like maybe a rubber seal gets blown. Obviously, that's not going to get covered in a program like this, but as far as savings or making sure that the, you know, products test the way they do for the test data that's on the QPL, that, you know, they're matched up within a reasonable amount and things like that. So we are definitely working in that direction. But at the end of the day, we do have to rely on, you know, safety organizations. You know, we require safety certification on all of our products.
Like, talking like Intertek and CSA, and, or not CSA, but UL.
Yeah, yeah,
Canadian
groups like
Standards
that.
Association, CSA. There you go.
But yeah, we you know, we rely on other groups to stick within their wheelhouse and tell us whether or not it's, you know, quote unquote good enough. But obviously there are other issues, like you said, just longevity of products that maybe not even related to lumen maintenance, and that's a little bit tougher. And I'm not really sure that's a thing that DLC can sort of police.
Hmm. So you're saying DLC has a tough time with horticulture. Are you still? You want to go ahead? You want to change the gears here or what?
No, I think we should keep on the Light Fair topic while we're at Light
Fair.
Okay,
get back to Light Fair, man. I don't know, man. You're the co-host.
We cut Robin off quick. I was trying. You cut him off.
Yeah,
anything
yeah.
else, Robin? You had one little surface mount from Philips.
Yeah, they also have their new 400-watt high bay, which is really nice, simply because it's the first one I've seen that actually uses the existing ballast. So you have an HID light source, 400-watt metal halide, for example, you unscrew that lamp.
You got to get that ballast out of there, dude.
Well, yeah, but if you don't want to, you don't have to. And that's
I saw that. That had the uplight around.
Yeah,
the
it has uplight and nice. Downlight. So 20,000 lumens, it's a nice fixture and well-priced as well.
Yeah, most are only downlight when you get into that.
Yeah.
That's good. So that was your little Philips
that was
tour
that, that's
so
all
far,
I've really
and you're going
so,
back.
So much so far,
yeah.
Well, I'll get to mine too. Brady, anything else with you?
No, you know, when I come out here, I'm not really looking at, you know, specific things. I'm not a specifier or anything like that. So I just try and sort of soak it in and see what's going on. I'm somewhat of a lighting geek, so I like to look at any residential stuff I can put in my house and stuff like that. So, you know, I just try and soak in, get general trends and stuff like that. You know, we've got our stakeholders meeting. We want to figure out what are people talking about? What are people doing here? So just, you know, we're really more looking at a general big picture, no specific products or anything. I'd probably get in trouble if I started hawking products.
Yeah,
you can't do that. No, on my side, you know, I don't really do a deep dive when I'm here. I don't sit in a booth for more than probably 5 minutes, but I walk through and I check everything out and just kind of see a general feel of it. And, you know, what I'm seeing a lot of is tunable lighting, and tunable being color changing, whether
RGB within white.
Within white.
3K to 5K and in between. And then also light changing or lumen. What am I looking for? Not dimming, but in a way dimming.
High-end trim
lumen
or something
options.
Where you're setting it lower.
Yeah, you can have different settings on the fixture. You can.
That's a niche market, though.
I don't know if it is, because you know what it's going to come down to is you're going to do one 2x4 troffer. And now, but who it's really for is for the distributor. Stock one part.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's going to be anywhere from 3,000 lumens to 5,000 lumens and 3K to 5K.
I don't know that I agree with you that it's just for the distributor. I think it's a benefit, obviously.
But how many end users do you think care about changing it? I mean, maybe initially, But then after that, are they ever going to change a Kelvin
temp? Set it and forget it.
Right.
Well, if you make it easy to change it, they will. The idea behind it that's being presented here, at least, and Philips did come out show us their tunable white stuff. You can, in a classroom environment, for example, or a meeting environment, you can dial back the color temperature based on what you're looking for. So for a collaborative environment, you might want, I don't know, warmer white, whereas for something that's more focused, you might want to dial it up to 5,000K.
Are you talking about a control that's on the luminaire?
Yes,
or are you talking about
actual
a control system?
No. Luminaires that will change color temperature.
Well, right, but I mean, where is that? Because it sounds like you're talking about, you know, you get one part in, and maybe it's a hidden on the back of a troffer or something, and you as a distributor can change the color temperature, but essentially it's... You set it up there, and the end user's not going to know where it is.
I'm kind of touching on both. Okay. And so, yeah, like what you're saying, Robin, is I think the concept makes sense, but I can tell you from my wife's a teacher, and she's not going to want to change the Kelvin temps between the day. If it's automated, that's one thing.
Right.
It's going to have to be automated for it to make sense.
And Philips's booth actually drew a direct line between tunable white and PoE, which I guess, Mike, is a whole different podcast.
What's that?
Power over Ethernet. And I think that's definitely coming.
Everybody, let's not drink the Kool-Aid here, okay? Come on, dude. You're never going to have any color changing. I'm going to tell it right now. In the next 5 years, there's going to be no 5,000K to 3,000K crap in your warehouse. That's going to be a top 100 SKU in the next 5 years.
Okay,
no
about
chance.
It.
All right, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a question to that, because that was a pretty emphatic statement.
Bet you $100.
I'm going to ask you a question. How many people do you sell troffers to right now that you're replacing T8 fluorescents and they're asking about dimming?
Dimming's one thing.
Well,
changing color
is
another thing.
The fact of the matter is that you don't know sometimes until you offer it what people want. And I've learned in my relatively short life that you don't assume that you know what people want, because there are
many good
companies.
I think largely people want the best price and the highest rebate. That's what they want.
Yeah, well, but
I think I know what they want.
I think it's getting to a point where light's going to matter, and that's what Robin's talking about. Is that, and different people are going to want different lighting. Right now, how do you determine the Kelvin temp? You send them a color chart. Say, hey, you, which customer?
No,
what
you
color
just
do you
what
want?
They have there now,
or so you do what they have.
They don't complain.
And
that's
once
it.
It's installed, that's it. But you know, if somebody comes in, how many times have you had a customer come back and say, "Oh, I bought 4,000K."
Somebody comes to my one of the sales reps comes in and says, "I'm going to change the color temperature." I'm going to say, "Don't even think about it." Have they decided that they want to change? Have they asked you? No. Then don't even bring it up. Just give them what they have and shut the.
Hey.
I would argue that you're doing your customers a disservice by not offering the all the benefits.
I think you're making it more complicated than it needs to be.
No, because everybody doesn't have to buy everything that's offered. But if you have it and don't offer it, then shame on you as a distributor.
I'd say 75% of our quotes are price comparisons to other contractors.
That's fine. And that market will not go away.
I think it's a niche market. I think it's niche. I'm not saying that Robin Watt shouldn't know about it and be able to talk to his customers about it, and Greg Eric or whatever, and teaching your sales reps to do it. I totally agree with all that.
Look,
my only position is that it's niche.
Last year, somebody came and dropped a T5 LED replacement lamp on my in our conference room, and I had up to that point not ever been asked one time about T5 LEDs.
Yeah, but one person did.
And
you're making my point.
I sell tons of them.
Okay.
You know, and I would have argued then.
Yeah, but are you changing the color? Are you changing the colors of those?
Not yet, but
I don't.
But here's what it comes. So technology is advancing, right? And as technology advances with everything, people want options.
That's right.
And now they have options. They're going to take the options.
That's correct.
And that's it, man. And so what's going to happen? You're going to have a troffer that's 2x4, and you can stock it one SKU. But you can give them all the options.
Right, but you're not going to be sitting there. You're not going to sell on the fact that they can change it. You're just going to match whatever they want.
Or you can tell them that it will. And I'm going
to
take you up on that $100 bet. So let's figure out how to make this.
Right now.
I don't know what we just bet exactly, but
I think something happened. We'll sort it out after.
Okay. But Mike, I think
we need a bucket of margaritas up here. Come on, man.
I think you ignore those trends at your peril as a distributor.
I think you're missing my point. Okay, and I agree with you that, you got to have some tricks up your sleeve. Okay, that makes you better. I agree. And one of them is, you know, having Brady Nemeth on the podcast. He's a trick I pull up my sleeve. There you go. No, but honestly, I think that, yes, I agree with you. I don't think the large majority of applications are going to want to have color changing, dynamic color changing, let's say. Call it dynamic color temperature adjustments. I think Greg's right. Distributors, you know what? I had a guy walk in with a 2x2 panel where you could set it at 3,000, 4,000, 5,000K, set it and forget it. No one's going to go change it remotely or anything like that. I don't think so.
There are a lot of companies here that have very big investments in who say otherwise in tunable light. And it'd be very interesting to see. I saw it, like I said, I only brought up the dimming of what used to be fluorescent trough as an argument, as an extreme to make a point. It's not even extreme, but the idea being that here was an option that people did not have, and now it's being offered, so they're demanding it.
You think it's niche? I don't. Disagree. We're going to have to agree to disagree.
But well, I'd agree with you, but we'd both be wrong.
Here's what I'm saying, because we may have lost the first bit of the podcast, and so I just want to, you're the president of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors?
I am.
I think that Nailed should sponsor this podcast. What do you think?
I think we're closer to that than we were, certainly before I came on.
I think we're already the unofficial podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors.
Absolutely.
And before I let you go, Brady, you're in, just in case, you're an emerging professional, or emerged, we're not sure yet. I'm submerged, he's re-emerging, and he's transitioning. So the DLC is friend of the show, Brady Nemeth is a friend of our show. We were thinking, Greg and I, is going to be the ambassador for Nailed to the DLC. Is that correct, El Presidente?
For at least a year, yep. I'm going to run over.
He's going to be the ambassador.
That's correct.
You know, Greg doesn't like to travel alone. So I think he's going to bring some. We were thinking that maybe we would do a podcast from the DLC convention. What do you think?
There's no way that I am paying for you and Eric to be in the same place at the same time. That's just not happening.
Fine. But what else? Here, let me ask you. Can we do a podcast at the DLC get-together?
I'm not a person to give the final go-around, but I'd certainly pitch it.
Would you give the host of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast a free pass into the show?
That's not my call, but I'll pass it along.
All right, well, I had to check on that.
You need to get the president over here like this guy. I'm just a lowly staffer.
All right. So, okay, we'll cut off the first session then, guys, unless you want to bring anything else up. Take a break, get a drink. I want to bring you back, though. You have to go again?
No, I'm out.
You're out?
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
All right. Well, thank you, guys, for coming on.